Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of April 26, 2018. Today we're joined by our frequent guest and prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good, good. And we're also happy to be joined by author and climate hawk, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, good, good. So for those of you who can't take your eyes off the events in Washington, you'd be happy to know that perhaps a voice of sanity, an accented voice of sanity, I would say, came on the scene over the last couple of days when French President Emmanuel Macron, I won't even try and pronounce it with my classy
Emmanuel
French.
Emmanuel Macron, right?
Yes, yes. So tell me, DR, just briefly, what message did Mr. Macron delivered to the Congress that our listeners ought to know about?
It was a very strong message. He addressed, he had a joint address to Congress, very similar to the joint address that Pope Francis had a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And as part of the address, he condemned the decision by Trump to pull out the Paris Climate Agreement. And he stated, quoting, although not attributing the quote from Senator Ed Markey, "Let's face it, there is no planet B." And he expressed hope that the United States will at some point go back into the Paris Climate Agreement. And he declared that we should, quote, work together in order to make our planet great again, unquote.
There you go. Well, it's a little, throwing a little shade, as they say, at our denier in chief. Well, okay, mm-hmm. Anyway, Mr. Macron, good for you. We'll see if you have any more impact on those dunderheads than the Pope did. We'll mm-hmm. check in later. So the other interesting thing that popped up this week, or the other discussion that I think is an interesting one, has to do with environmental justice, and it's tees off a podcast that I heard, a podcast put up by Vox Media. I don't know if you guys listen to Vox Media, but there's a show called Today Explained on Vox Media.
Great show.
And today's show was about Flint, Michigan, which in many ways has been an epicenter of, maybe we can categorize it as one of the worst man-made environmental disasters in American history, as compared to Hurricane Mariah, which is, no, Hurricane Maria. Maria, sorry.
I can be a hurricane, but no.
Which is, but Flint, Michigan has been devastated environmentally with, of course, the lead the lead in the water, right? And the show went through a discussion of what's going on in Flint, Michigan. It's 4 years now, and I guess the governor has just decided that, you know, the water is pretty good enough to drink, technically good enough to drink, so they're going to stop handing out bottled water in Flint, Michigan, which is a bit much. But I guess one of the points of the podcast, or that seemed to come through strongly to me, was that this situation in Flint, Michigan would have remained hidden for a long time, years, if people living in the town hadn't taken it upon themselves to do the legwork, the organizing, to find out about something they knew was bad. They had this quote from a woman who had two twin 5-year-olds, and one was 50 pounds and the other was 35 pounds because they had ingested, you know, lead from the water, right? And that she was the one that just said she wasn't going to take it anymore, right? And that mm-hmm. began. And so I just think it's a classic example of the question of environmental justice, and how, of course, one of the questions that came up in the podcast is, would that problem have happened in a wealthier town or town with more political power, right? And who knows? But the general consensus was that no, it would not have happened, right? Have you guys been following the Flint situation lately, or is there any, I don't know, because I think Flint is a microcosm for a lot of other stuff. I've got a long list of things that have come up lately that are kind of intersection of all these topics that climate hawks need to recognize and ally themselves with. So that's not quite a question, DR, but let me put it to you. Have you heard anything lately about the Flint situation?
Yes, there's been a lot of discussion about the horrifying decision by Governor Snyder to basically say, you know, everything's fine now. There's no need to provide free bottled water, but there's still tremendous activism going on against it. I believe there was I believe the mayor of Flint has taken legal action against Governor Snyder, challenging legally the decision to cut off the free bottled water and basically making it clear that, you know, things have not been remedied yet. And when we talk about the issue of environmental justice, I don't remember the person who originated this tweet, but it's a tweet that Brad Friedman recently made reference to on his program. And it's a very salient point that we shouldn't forget. We talk about recently, you know, everybody talks about the president of Syria poisoning his own people, all this sort of outrage about, you know, Assad poisoning his own people. Didn't Snyder, in a very real sense, poison his own people too?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't we be outraged equally about that?
Absolutely. And I think that I think one of the points in the podcast that I was making reference to is saying how this could have been resolved by a small number of people who almost intentionally ignored it and hid the mm-hmm. issue, right? And that, I think that there's a bunch of stories that are not all quite climate stories, but let me just list them up and we can, I don't know, put them in the blender. This past week there was a shooting, I think it was in Alabama, in the Waffle House in Alabama, where a nutty guy came in with an AR-15. I'll let you guess what color his skin was. He comes in at 3 in the morning with an AR-15 and shoots the place up and is stopped by a brave guy, a good guy without a gun, as it happens, right, who ran mm-hmm. up and stopped the guy. And okay, there's this whole thing that now is swept under the rug of I think the whole thing has some racial connotations. There was a story that I saw, I mean, it had to be on sort of Facebook and Twitter things, of a woman who was basically arrested in another kind of Waffle House down there in the south somewhere because she didn't want to pay for the plastic utensils. And the police came in, you could just tell, with the attitude that, you know, she was, they didn't treat her as they would someone someone different, right? Very, very, you've got so there's that. There's a case that I read about this past week of a woman, I don't even remember what state she's in, but a woman of color activist pushing for energy, extreme energy stuff in the neighborhood to try and help her neighbors out, is then arrested for a different kind of crime, right? So she was, you know, had a gun out to defend herself, but the whole weight of the criminal system came down on this activist, and now she's in prison with shackles on, 7 months pregnant, and is probably going to give birth in prison. It makes you squint your eyes up, say, really? You know, especially when the guy who shot up the Waffle House is out on bond, right? After, you know, kills four people and they let him out on bond.
The girl that was in Detroit was actually, they say that she was acting in self-defense when she pulled the gun out because someone was trying to run her over with a car and threatening her toddler. I think she had a kid who was in the car as well or something like that. And, you know, the big thing with the Detroit, with the loss of this woman, Ra, was that she is a big activist. She's pulling all of these people together to stop pollution from coming into their neighborhood, and it's a really big loss to have her not there advocating for clean air and water where they live.
And I think the article that I saw said that Michigan is one of these, I think it is a stand your ground state. So in principle, who was the guy down in Florida that shot somebody?
Zimmerman.
Zimmerman, right. I mean, stand your ground. He had a gun, but he was a white guy with a gun, so that was okay. Where this woman, you'd think the NRA would be lauding her and put her on every bumper sticker as, you know, using her gun to defend herself, because that's their whole point. But anyway.
Yeah.
But I guess go ahead.
Well, the article said also that that Black people are 75% more likely than any other American to live in a neighborhood that borders oil and natural gas refineries, and that they face a disproportionate amount of health threats. So, you know, this is a you've got that, and then you also have people who are black are four times more likely to be incarcerated, right, than a white woman.
I mean, it seems that these are inconvenient facts that we have to recognize, that when we're talking about environmental justice and climate change, that these things are connected, and that they're, I don't know, you can't not, you can't ignore them. You have to speak about them and at least say that they exist, or else they just get swept under the rug. I mean, Mariah, did you see anything? There's a woman, now this is not, this is environmental justice in a different sense, that down in the county of Roanoke in Virginia, there's a woman who has been sitting in a tree for the last month in a little hammock up in a tree to prevent the tree from being cut down to make way for a pipeline across her property in Southern Virginia someplace. Did either one of you catch that story?
Yeah, her name's Red, right? I guess she calls herself Red, and the Roanoke County Police have moved a boundary so that people can't get to her to give her food and supplies, mm-hmm, and water, and it's gotten hot, and she's you know, it needs to have obviously water. And I think they moved the boundary in such a way that it actually was pushing people to fall off a cliff, like not a big cliff, but a little cliff into a stream.
Really?
And they said, well, you know, that's not our problem. Don't go back there.
Well, I mean, just imagine the picture of someone on their own property in a hammock, 30 feet up in a tree, right? It's out in the woods someplace, and she's there to prevent the tree from being cut down by presumably a bunch of excavator trucks that want to march through her property. And presumably the excavators have legal authority to be there, right? They've got some sort of right of way. But that's a very brave thing to try and prevent, to do. And then, as you say, the support system that allows her to, God knows, be in a tree for 30 days. I mean, that's a lot. But
there are people who are, the first responders have been bringing her some food and water and medicine. So the MVP, the Mountain Valley Pipeline, has been cutting her off, mm-hmm, cutting her supporters off from bringing her stuff. But I guess that first responders are helping her. So at least she's getting something.
What we need to do is to go down there and fly a drone up into the tree and bring her a cup of coffee and a pack of cigarettes.
That's
true. Why couldn't you do that?
Can Amazon jump in and, you know, just
we could order
send her some stuff?
Have Jeff Bezos send her a pack of a box of popcorn by. The other interesting thing is that, so this one I'm not so familiar with, but out in British Columbia, which of course is not, unfortunately, is not part of the United States. It's a beautiful part of the world. British Columbia, there's another pipeline going through. And the native people there, which of course have more rights in Canada than their siblings do down here in the U.S., there was another nonviolent protest. And in that case, they were all arrested, sort of like the West Roxbury protesters on some sort of civil, you know, loitering or something. But then the prosecutor up in Vancouver decided to up the charges to criminal charges, which could put them all in jail for a long time. And as part of this, it's related to this general crackdown on climate activists that we talked about a couple weeks ago, that there's more and more states that are trying to put in serious penalties on people who protest, like our friend Red in the tree, things like that. So it's...
Do you think that there's, to go back to the story about this woman, Ra, in Detroit, who was so easily, you know, put into jail for something which was clearly self-defense, seems to be clearly self-defense, do you think that the you know, there was some sort of pressure to put her in jail because she's doing a lot to curb pollution?
You know, there is no such thing as a coincidence, right?
Mm.
It seems like quite harsh and unnecessarily harsh. But to get that person off the street would certainly be convenient. I mean, I hate to be
someone who's a good community organizer, right?
Right, right. I hate to be a tinfoil conspiracy theory guy, right? But I mean, who knows? There's very little information about the situation there in Detroit, so
yeah.
You can't say
a number of the stories from what I've seen, they're basically centering around the fact that she's basically a victim of mandatory minimum sentencing, and it goes to the sort of injustice of mandatory minimum sentencing, and therefore, you know, it's basically a form of railroading, and it goes back to the issue of essentially, you know, she was clearly standing her ground, but apparently, jurors in that case didn't think that she was standing her ground. I guess standing your ground is one of those things that in theory, you know, much like open carry laws, in theory they apply to everybody, in practice,
No, they don't. I agree with you. So there's a lot of turmoil, which is in a way is good. I mean, I think that with the advent of the current administration, a lot of the effort that would be going into passing laws kind of gets pressed down into these other modes of resistance, shall we say. But DR, let me put the ball in your court to talk a little bit about the single piece of good news that came out of all of this up in Minnesota. And let me set the stage by saying that probably, I don't know, a year ago now, 18 months, there was a protest, a civil disobedience action by a group that called themselves the Valve Turners. And what they did was they basically walked up to a pipeline, which is spread across a big part of, I guess, Minnesota and North Dakota. They went to different control points, valves, basically, and simultaneously they shut all the valves. They turned the valves and closed the flow of the pipeline, and then's the name, right? And I guess that what they had done is to call up the pipeline company and warn them that they were going to do such a thing so that the pipeline company would be safe, et cetera, et cetera. But anyway, those guys basically had the book thrown at them out in Minnesota, but they were the Valve Turners. So tell me, what has transpired most recently in that case, which has been grinding on for some time?
Well, the Minnesota Court of Appeals has ruled that the four activists involved in the case can use a necessity defense and argue that their actions were necessary because there was no other way to challenge or to mitigate the imminent threat posed by the emissions from that fossil fuel infrastructure. It was a 2-1 decision. There's an expectation that this will be appealed to the Minnesota Supreme Court. There was one dissenter who one of the dissenters seemed very, very vigorous about the idea that they should not have the right to use a necessity defense. It'll be interesting to see if the Minnesota Supreme Court, which I believe has a majority of justices appointed by the current governor who is not a dinosaur to my knowledge, mm-hmm. will be interesting to see if the Minnesota Supreme Court upholds that decision. It will also be interesting to see what the jury decides. I think there was a story, I believe in the AP, that basically implied that the jury pool will likely be unsympathetic to the individuals charged in this case. But it'll be interesting to see if in fact those who have been charged are able to bring in some highly persuasive, you know, mm-hmm. you know, climate activists, climate scientists, what have you,
and I think,
if they can win over that jury, and could we indeed see for the first time a jury acquittal as opposed to the judicial acquittal in the West Roxbury case?
And I think that's the implication of the judge's decision to allow this necessity defense. And we've been talking about the necessity defense for a long time. We can probably go back to 8, 9, 10 shows. Necessity defense is a kind of legal defense for civil disobedience. It keeps getting rejected by courts, but in this case, it's been accepted. And the thing about the necessity defense, it will allow the defendants, the Valve Turner people, to introduce into evidence in open court scientific data related to climate change, right? So if you're going to make the case that it was necessary for you to break the law because of climate change, then you can bring in all the data about climate change. And that, despite all the talk, has never happened before in as you say, a jury trial. And so that makes this case in Minnesota quite interesting as a template for other people considering direct action. I mean, it's very interesting. Very interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Anyway. I see by the clock on the wall that it is time for us to go. The pumpkin, the carriage is outside. It's going to turn into a pumpkin if we don't go very, very soon. So we need to wrap it up here. Let me just say that we'll put up links to most of what we talked about on the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. And you, of course, can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using almost any of the podcast distribution apps. But things like Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, etc. are all available to you. We'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thanks for being here, Mariah.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.